as you can imagine, that quality of illustration is a very useful exercise in scaffolding learning, particularly if we are using it to prep for our narration. Because of that, narration and illustration are my two most commonly used teaching tools in our homeschooling. Hello, this is Stella from The Beauty of Play, and today we're talking about the use of illustration in homeschooling. Illustration and art really came to life for me when I started homeschooling. Before that, I didn't pay much attention to it, but because I wanted my children to have a whole child experience, I paid much more attention to art when we started homeschooling. One of the things that I noticed while we were doing the art, either copying a piece throughout a book that we often use as inspiration, or doing our nature studies outside where we are drawing something that we see, is on both accounts, it takes a great deal of concentration and studying in order to copy that piece and put it onto the paper. As you can imagine, that quality of illustration is a very useful exercise in scaffolding learning, particularly if we are using it to prep for our narration. Because of that, narration and illustration are my two most commonly used teaching tools in our homeschooling. From the science of learning, we know two different things that are related to illustrations. One is dual coding, which is drawing, sketching, doodling, inserting symbols in our note-taking, enhances our memory. And the second is that the more effort that we put into our learning in whatever form, drawing, notebooking, a project, the more retention that we have for that learning. And we know, especially from the dual coding and the note-taking, that these illustrations don't always have to be perfect or even pretty in order for them to be useful to us, so keep that in mind, because I have learned that at different times in homeschooling, I get different amounts of effort depending on my children's mood and energy, and knowing that the illustration doesn't have to be beautiful or have a great deal of effort at every time is helpful for me to remember. In the same way that I use copywork in different ways and different parts of copywork depending on what my aim at teaching is, I also do the same thing with illustration. And sometimes it will be looking as if we are doing basically the same things, but I'm focusing on different aspects for different things. For example, sometimes I'm just using them as free art to accompany a narration, but other times I'm using them to specifically scaffold an upcoming narration. This might look like a diagram or anatomy of something or a life cycle before we start doing a narration on that topic for our main lesson book. Sometimes I'm using them for an art lesson in addition to whatever we're studying, and other times I'm using map work for history. I've also used it in math. I know you know I'm a big fan of illustration and narration in math, and also for language arts to show relationships. So today I'm going to go through by subject and just kind of go through how I use narration as a teaching tool for each of those subjects. Let's start with science. Even in science, depending on what my goal is, I use illustration in different ways. The most common way that I use illustration is to support a narration, and in doing that, we're also using spacing. So on the first day, we may be doing reading of material or perhaps a group of demonstrations and making observations about those demonstrations. And then the following day, an illustration will go into the notebook. And then the day after that, we will use that illustration to support us in memory recall for the narration. So in this way, we're using spacing, which we know improves learning, and we're using scaffolding because we are doing an illustration so that we have a basis for our narration, and we're using memory recall. Depending on what we are doing, the illustration changes. For instance, if there's a particular concept or idea that I want her to know, she may be copying explicitly from my illustrations, or I may have a book or other source that we are copying from. Try to keep the artistic flexibility and freedom available, but sometimes I'm very specific about the subject that we are drawing. For instance, I may have an anatomy drawing or a life cycle drawing or a particular diagram that I want her to copy. I'm talking as if only my daughter is involved with me, but I also did this for my son. For instance, here you see a diagram of the lungs, and then you see several diagrams that he did with the heart and the circulation and the components involved. And these supported his narrations that went with the biological processes of how oxygen moves through the body, through the systems in the body. You're seeing this here also with the light diagram that I had my daughter copy for physics before her narration. And again, with the solar system, when my son was studying astronomy and we were doing the life cycle of the stars, this illustration is done after the reading of the material and the narration follows it. Not all illustrations have to have this purpose. Oftentimes, we are just putting an illustration into our notebooks without using it to support the narration or scaffolding the narration. And in this case, I let her choose whatever she wants. We often use books to support us in choosing an illustration to do. Other times we are using dual coding. So in dual coding, you're using small pictures, illustrations, charts, graphs in your note-taking to support learning. So for this project was a collage project that we were doing in the comparison of monocots and eudicots. And we first are starting out with some dual coding, doing some memory recall, going over the information that we had read about and learned so far in our studies. For the monocot and eudicot comparison, it was along the way, so all the information wasn't in one spot. And we used our note-taking with the dual coding to prep us for this collage. And then this collage, this piece of illustration, then supported us in our narration having to do with monocots and eudicot comparisons. And I am going to morph into how we use illustrations sometimes as an art lesson, because in this particular situation where we were doing this diagram of the intersection of the leaf, it served as both an art lesson and as our science illustration with a diagram that would support our narration. At the beginning of this lesson, when we're first starting, we're studying the diagram in the book. And we are talking about the different shapes that we see that may help in our alignment, the proportions that we notice, that the tip of the leaf is off center to the right and how far up to give us a better perspective of our drawing. And we are sketching that drawing on our watercoloring paper. After that, we are also noticing the highlights and the shadows, and maybe even marking those in our picture. You will see in this one, the top of the leaf, we have marked our highlights that I am going around right now and leaving white. We also talk about the washes for each of the colors and for wet on wet watercolor techniques and wet on dry watercolor techniques, as well as making sure that if we want to do wet on dry, that we're allowing a certain area, usually working in another area, to dry before we go back and paint the next section. In this particular exercise, we also talked about how to do highlights and shadows. And that can be done with complementary colors, or it can be done with adjacent colors. I really enjoy the adjacent colors because it adds more color vibrancy to the picture, and I'm all about rainbows. But a lesson like this gives us the opportunity to practice all those things that we've learned in art from other sources and apply them to our illustration for, in this instance, our science. Another part of this activity that I want to note is, although we're doing an art activity, we are using the nomenclature in our description of what we're looking at throughout the activity. So in this particular instance, we're talking about the epidermis, the mesosphere, the chloroplast. We're talking about the stomata that you can barely see at the bottom of this picture, and the cuticle on top. We're using the terminology in our discussion about the art. And in so in that way, it allows us to combine two usually thought of as different disciplines together. And then once we finished this project, the following day, we labeled the entire diagram, and the day after that was a narration. So this particular illustration served as an art lesson, an illustration diagram to understand science, and scaffolding for the narration for scientific concept. In this particular one, the anatomy or dissection of a leaf. This particular illustration, I'm using it to review lessons that we've learned in art before from different sources. And for this discussion, I'm trying to keep the art lessons and illustrations separate and only talk about illustration. So one other way that we have used illustration in art is through copying an artist. For this, we're usually doing a picture study beforehand and then copying their work. And there is so much that can be learned in art from copying the masters. So let's move on to language arts. And this may be the smallest area that I use illustration for, but it's still helpful. We used illustrations in language arts mostly to show relationships or diagrams to make information process easier. Michael Clay Thompson has a couple of diagrams on the parts of speech and the parts of a sentence that I think personally are ingenious. These diagrams show how a pronoun replaces a noun, and then the relationship to an adjective and an adverb to a noun and verb respectively. He also has a beautiful diagram that shows the relationship of the parts of a sentence with the subject and the predicate, and depending on a linking verb or action verb, direct object or subject complement. We've also used illustration with some of Rooted in Languages' work, particularly with their plot art. In language arts, relationships are well shown in illustration. Let's shift and talk about illustrations in math. And I use illustrations, also paired with narration sometimes, for math a lot. You know that we keep a math journal, and in our math journal, illustrations serve a lot of purposes. For one, I use it a lot if we are doing an observational work, a notice and wonder, and she is making some kind of pattern with rods or blocks or various other things, and we want to split the work up and do part of our observations on one day, and then the notebooking and illustrations on the other day, then I will have her either stamp her work if we're using the rods or draw her work into the notebook to continue the exercise later. That way, if the design is messed up on the table or we need to put things away, we still have a copy of the work that we did. Also use illustration quite often in our math journal just to record our math work, because sometimes the illustrations just illustrate, no pun intended, the concept far better. These often tend to be paired with narration as well. The other thing is that I may have her copy something like Galletno's chart that you see here into her notebook. What I found as in art, when you're trying to draw something, you really have to concentrate and study it, that when you're trying to copy something, particularly from math, you have to pay attention and you have to concentrate. And that tends to bring awareness and observation to the activity that you're doing. And I tend to use illustrations quite a bit when we hit geometry. Now, Waldorf geometry is very art intensive anyway, but the illustrations that we put into our notebook having to do with geometry serve two purposes. One, often, as I said before, the visual will offer a concept easier to understand when you can see it. And then also, a lot of the geometry, the art is used as the final process, like an integration. And I'll talk about that a little bit with history as well. And with that, let's shift into history. There are a couple ways that we use illustration outside of our main lesson pages within history. One is contextualization. We do this through our Charlotte Mason timelines and sometimes through our art. For instance, this video, A Lesson from Waldorfish, goes over the Industrial Revolution, and you can see the revolution come right before your eyes in the drawing, because they start with the landscape and a slower pace, and then slowly start building the houses and the factories and the stacks and the smog and so forth into the picture. So you almost see time elapse there. We also use illustration if something is easier to process visually or might help us in the process of making the illustration. For instance, we illustrated the moon phases for our Native America history unit. Also, map work is a big part of our history illustration. Sometimes it's just familiarity, and then sometimes, like this, is to illustrate a point. This is the decrease of the bison population as we move along through the time of history. For this particular map of the United States, I wanted to start to get familiarity with the geography and where the state borders were and where the state was in relation to the country. And then this map with the 13 American colonies was to show how it was different, and the colonies only took up part of the state borders of today, and they were much smaller than our current states. World War map, we did something a little different. On this one, we started out with the illustration of the map and colored the different alliances. But those alliances changed during the war. We took a photocopy of this map, and then we cut the countries out and sorted them as they entered the war. I do this a lot with other illustrations as well. If we're going to do a sorting and comparison activity for science, we will do the illustration, I will copy their illustrations, and then we will go through the sorting activity. We did this in particular for the solar system. Another aspect of illustration that we use within history in particular, but this can be used in a variety of subjects, often wet on wet is used in this way, is a processing of the material on an emotional level. Some of our history in particular can be deep and challenging, and in this Africa block, even though we sandwiched it in between the history of African continent and the diversity of people and countries there, and then the accomplishments that happened by prominent African descended people through the world, the center part of our block that went over the transatlantic slave trade was heavy, and we use this particular lesson to emotionally integrate, give us a little bit of therapy for processing that lesson. I think I have covered the bulk of subjects that we use illustration for. You can see, depending on what my goals are for the illustration and what we're studying, what the intent, the takeaway is from the activity, that how I do the illustration and what illustration that we do changes. Some of them are explicit teaching, where she is copying my work and we're talking about what needs to go in it, and some of them are much more creative and have more freedom in the activity, and she can choose the illustration that she wants to do. Some of them are an accompaniment and support for narration, and then others stand alone. In all the ways that we do illustration, it paired with narration is probably my most used teaching tool. That concludes this video. Thank you so much for watching. As always, if you have any questions, you can leave them below the post or reply to any of my emails or use the contact form in your subscription. Thank you for watching, and until next time, happy homeschooling. Thank you.